Welcome to the Mastering the Mind podcast. We will be taking over from John and Oliver.
But don't worry, same podcast, same goals, same objective, but different voices. My name is Connie.
My name is Lotta.
And my name is Taylor. And we're here to bring you athletes and coaches' stories of how they cope with the mental demands of competing in high-level sport.
Today we are joined by Martinez Evans. He is an author and running coach who recently released his new book, Slow Air Run Club, The Ultimate Guide for Anyone Who Wants to Run. Having now completed 8 marathons, Martinez first started his running journey when he was told by his doctor to lose weight or die.
He is also the founder of the Slow AF Run Club, which inspires over 10,000 community members to simply move their body above a walking pace. Today, he'll be discussing his own experiences as well as offering some advice to listeners based on his passions, the importance of inclusivity, growth mindset, overcoming obstacles, and looking after our mental health.
So let's welcome Martinez to the podcast.
First off, huge welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How have you been?
I can't complain. Complain at all.
Has it been a good week so far?
So far, so good. Can't complain too much, you know. It's a new year. You know, everybody goals have failed all the pieces by now. So, you know, everybody's back to normal. So, you know, it's a good year.
Great to hear. Okay, so let's help our listeners get to know you in more detail. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came up with the idea of the Slow AF Run Club?
Yeah, so I have a varied background. I think the amount of jobs and all the things I've done is probably a podcast in itself. So I probably won't spend too much time on that. I'll start here. I have degrees like a thermometer. So I have a degree in exercise science, I have a degree in public health, and I have a degree in digital marketing. And with those degrees and those experiences, a lot of life experiences have happened, which I found myself sitting in a doctor's office and him calling me fat and telling me to lose weight or die. And I said a bunch of four-letter colorful words that I probably won't say here. And one thing led to another, and I started my running journey. And that was about 11 years ago. And throughout that journey, I was able to like run races, run all over the world. And one of the things that I always felt while running was alone and just felt lonely. So I created the Slow AF Run Club as a way to help fulfill that hole that I had while running and being able to hope to fulfill that hole that other people had while running as well.
That's great. How big is it now?
We have about 30,000 members worldwide.
Wow.
That's huge. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. No small club.
How do you do that? Because you said like worldwide. How does it work? How does the club function?
So it's a virtual community. So we have an app that you can download on iOS and Android called the Slow AF Run Club. We house everything there, and people, you know, get together, find people in their area, start running races together and things of that sort. We also do run coaching, things of that sort. And the other cool thing we just did was we just launched a nonprofit. So with that nonprofit, we look to do more programming to getting more people out there. Overall, like we have this goal of getting 1 million people to start running in the body that they have right now.
Wow. Amazing. Sounds really cool. And what kind of fueled your passion to become a running coach? Because obviously it's quite a big jump from going from that moment in the doctor's office to then now being a running coach. It's quite a big jump, to be fair.
Yeah, so like one of the reasons I even became a running coach wasn't to like train people. It was more or less to train myself, because being a 300-pound runner, like nobody would train me back in 2012. Like people would be like, oh, you hurt yourself. I don't want to be responsible if you hurt yourself, so on and so forth. Like you should just lose weight first. And like my thing was like, well, how you expect me to lose weight? Right. Like people's like, oh, you should lose weight first and then I'll train you. And it's like, well, like, how you expect me to do that, sir or madam? So like it just became this this vicious cycle of like people blaming the fat person for what they are and be like, oh, I can't help you. You need to do this on your own. So I just got so frustrated with that that I became a coach myself. Like, I went and went through the coaching certification, and I did all that just to train myself so I can know how to run myself without being in, without injuring myself. So, like, with all of that, like, knowledge, eventually I start moving into like training other people to do it. But mainly it was just for me and like serving my own issue that I had.
Did you feel like you experienced a lot of stigma because of your weight? And
absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that was the thing that pissed me off the most, was that like people just seen my outer appearance and just be like, oh, you got to lose weight first. And it's like, ain't nobody say, you know what? Nobody, when I was starting this journey, being like, oh, you want to run a marathon? Well, cool. Like, let me help you get there. Like, these are the steps to do that. Like, everybody was just like, oh, you just need to lose weight first. And I was like, how's that helpful?
How did it feel to become a coach also then? Did you feel stigma being a running coach, being overweight?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Like, I even think about like now, like I was scrolling Instagram and like there was this dude who's like a personal trainer and was like, make sure you hire a coach that look like he's been in the gym. They'll be hiring no fat slob. And it's like, your outer appearance has nothing to do with what you know as a coach.
Yeah.
But like the fitness industry is one of the only industries where people can use their own body as like the billboard to say like, hey, like, look at me. I have 6-pack abs. You like this? Mm-hmm. I can train you to do the same thing. And it's like, is that useful?
Yeah, I guess one of the like critical things with you is that you can share your experiences and you can say like, I've been in this position. I've been there where, you know, I might not wanted to start running. Like I might feel like I'm out of place. Whereas other people might not necessarily have had those experiences like you did.
Right, right.
Could you take us back to kind of those like maybe first few weeks after the doctor's appointment where you did start to think about getting into running and how you're going to do it and what that looked like long term?
Yeah, so it wasn't even a few weeks. It was that day. So like, okay,
cool.
So let's talk about the doctor's appointment. How you even got there? I was working at this job. I was on my feet like 10 hours a day in hard bottom dress shoes. Like I was working a sales job. So I was selling suits. The name of the company was called Men's Warehouse. So it's like a suits place, right? So I developed some hip issues and I went to go see this doctor. Never met this doctor a day in my life. And I remember just sitting down and be like, hey doc, like hip hurts. Started this new job, yada, yada, yada. And before he touched me anything, he was like, I know what's wrong with you. You're fat. You need to lose weight or die. And I was like, what? And then he's like, yes, you need to go start walking on a track and lose weight. And I don't remember looking at this doctor and be like, that don't make sense. I said, that don't make sense because I'm on my feet for 10 hours a day. Like my job consists of me walking around and helping customers and selling suits. So like, what do you mean I need to go start walking to lose weight? So I was just so frustrated. And man, I was like, screw all this. I'm going to go run a marathon. He laughed at me and told me that was the dumbest thing he heard in all his years of practicing medicine. He said a lot of other things too. And I said a lot of other things as well back to him because, you know, you're just not going to talk to me any type of way. But the gist was like, screw this man. Like, I'm going to go do something. Like, I'm going to go do something about it. So that day, like, as I was driving home, I drove past a running shoe store and I bought running shoes that day. And then I was like, well, screw that. I got the running shoes. I'm going to go for a run that day. And like, that's what I did. My first run lasted all of 15 seconds because I fell off the treadmill because I was trying to like keep up with these other two dudes who were running faster than me. And like, I fell off the treadmill. My pride was hurt. My ego was hurt. And I don't know if y'all ever had this experience, but it took me back to like when I was younger and I was riding I got my first bike and I remember like my dad helping me with the bike and so on and so forth. And I fell off the bike and I cried and I was like, I don't want a bike anymore. And like he was like, oh no, like we're not leaving until like you ride this bike. Like, and I remember by the end of the day, like I love riding bikes. So I kind of took that experience as the same experience of like me falling off this treadmill and being like, oh no, like this treadmill won't beat me. So every day afterwards, like I got on the treadmill and just did a little bit more than I did the previous day. So it went from 15 seconds to 30 seconds, 30 seconds to a minute. Next thing you know, I was running 5 minutes straight. And then, you know, minutes turned into miles. So I started looking at like, oh, like now I can run 2 miles. Or like, you know, oh, I can run for 35 minutes straight. Like, look at me now, right? And it kind of just grew from there. It was more like momentum and building momentum to get me there.
Was goal setting a big part of your journey? Did you like set specific goals as you went along? Or how did you get to running a marathon? Did you just
Early on, the goal was just to run a marathon, right? And I necessarily didn't know like all the other steps to get there. I was just like, oh, I'm going to run a marathon. But then being able to be like, oh, like there's this 5K, like I'm going to run a 5K. And then like, oh, there's a 10K. So I kind of just like build it up step by step to say, okay, I'm going to run a 5K first. And then I'm going to run a 10K. And then I'm going to run a half marathon. And then after the half marathon, like I'll continue to train for like a full marathon. So like those were like the goals along the way, but like there wasn't on like, oh, like goal one, like buy running shoes, check. Like it
yeah.
wasn't any of that. It was just more like, I'm gonna go run a marathon, I'm gonna figure it out. And as I was figuring it out, I noticed that there were like shorter distances to run.
And how did you motivate yourself throughout this whole journey? Was it just to prove the doctor wrong, or was it, did you like experience sometimes the motivation was very low and you had to kind of find ways to push through that?
Sheer anger and spite. That doctor really pissed me off. I really wanted to put hands on him. Like, as I tell people, I wanted to give him a deep tissue massage with my fist just against his face. Like, I just wanted to like punching bag on his face, right? So like I think spite took me a very long way because like with me being like a previous athlete, one of the things that I just harnessed was like that feeling of like, can I harness that feeling of being pissed in order to go out and do the thing I don't want to do? So of course I did that. Other things I did was like habit stacking. So like one of the things that I'll do is like I wouldn't brush my teeth until I had on my running clothes, and then I'll brush my teeth and go out and run. So I'll do stuff like that. That also kind of helped me get out the door that I necessarily had to think about. Or like over time, so it's like, all right, like you cannot brush your teeth until you go for a run. And like sometimes I'll be out there with like the funky dragon breath, like breath just horrendous. But it's like, well, I can't brush my teeth until I go.
I really like that because you're like using stuff that you already have in place in your routine to kind of drive you to do the stuff that you might not necessarily want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's clever. I'm really interested in something you said back then when you like got on the treadmill for the first time and you saw these two guys next to you and you're trying to keep pace with them. I think social comparison is a massive thing in a lot of sports, but particularly in running, it's like quite evident through like things like Strava. I don't know about you guys, but I'm constantly feeling myself like looking at other people's Strava, seeing what other people are doing, and it's a horrendous rabbit hole. So I would love to know kind of how you got the kind of social side of things going with your run club and not the social comparison side of things.
Oh, because our one of our ethos is comparison is the thief of joy. Like, we don't compare each other to anybody else. Like, because it just don't make sense. Like, you cannot compare my day zero to your day 5,000. Like, that just doesn't make sense. Like, if somebody been working on something for 5,000 days straight, and then you hop in at day zero and be like, oh, I can do that as well. And it's like, no, like, do you not see the 5,000 days this person went through? So, like, that's something that I try to tell people is that you do not know the backstory of what's going on the other person that you're trying to compare yourself to. So, like, why even do that? Like, it's just so harmful for yourself. So, like, that's one of the things that we do. And we do a lot of course correction when people want to compare themselves. We let them know, like, that's not what we do here.
And what do you recommend for people that, like, find it difficult not to do that?
Stop it.
Just stop.
Just stop. But sometimes that means, like, limiting stuff. So, like, sometimes that means, like, cutting off your Strava. Sometimes that means, like, deleting it from your phone, right? Like have your Garmin watch, have it synced to your Strava, but don't have Strava on your phone. It could be as simple as that. So, like, all the stats are there. You can always go back to it, but, like, you ain't got to go look at it right now or right then and there.
Yeah, nice. Cool.
What would you say has been, like, the most rewarding part of being, or, like, as your role as the founder of the Slow AF Running Club?
Come again? What was the question again?
What do you think is the most rewarding part?
The most rewarding part of being on the Slow AF Run Club or founding the Slow AF Run Club is seeing this pattern that constantly happens. It's, I'm here, I don't think I can be a runner. And then it goes from, okay, I'm gonna try it out. So, oh wait, I'm getting some progress. So, oh wait, I think I'm a runner. So, oh wait, now I'm running my first race. And, like, constantly seeing that story and that path over and over and over again, to the point where, like, somebody's like, I know you've seen a lot of people, I can't do this. And being like, if you just follow the path, like, you'll get there. And then actually follow the path, and then they get it, and I can just sit back and be like, I told you so.
Do a lot of the members share their personal stories with you?
Yeah, they share their stories with the club in general, yes.
There has to have been some inspirational stories.
There are tons of inspirational stories, right? I don't want to put people's names out there, but, like, just the overall gist is, like, people who come in and be like, I don't know if I can do this. And then, like, through the process of getting loved up on and starting to run, like, their mind change and the physical activity change. And I think that's always a great thing.
You mentioned a little bit about being a former athlete yourself. Could you talk us through a little bit more about that?
Yes. So where are you all based at?
We're in London.
You're in London. So
both of us, yeah.
I played American football.
Okay, cool. Nice.
I played American. You know about American football.
I played American football, and I played American football in high school as well as in college. So it was just one of those things where, you know, being an athlete, you start to ingrain some of the things, or, like, you start to process some of the things that they ingrain you, right? So, like, overcoming obstacles, or, like, I like to think of, like, you got to have a memory of, like, a goldfish, right? Like, so if bad things happen to you, you got to, like, have a goldfish memory in order to, like, continue to go through and perform, because, like, you're in the middle of it. You just can't be like, oh, like, something bad happened to me and I got to stop. So those are things that I really learned from, like, being a athlete.
Nice. Okay. And on that, as we're obviously a sports psychology podcast, could you share with the listeners a couple of the, like, psychological themes that come up in your book?
Yes. So some of my, I would say, top three psychological themes that's inside the book that I think people will get use out of. The first thing is the notion of delusional self-belief. Knowing that everything that is in this world is made up by somebody. So I think about, like, the lights, right? Like, most people, when they go there, they flick on the lights and it's come on. But don't think about all the other things that come along with that. So imagine, like, back in the day, and it's like, oh, I want to make a light bulb. And somebody being like, you delusional? Like, you didn't have too much milk or the poppy, right? But, like, they went through it and they did it regardless of, like, all the opposition that came their way, because they had to be delusional to think about that. And I think for a lot of people, you think about your goals that way and just be delusional and believe in it when nobody else does, and do the work to go there, you'll prove a lot of people wrong. So that's the first one. Practice delusional self-belief. The second one is like, you know, of course, SMART goals, right? But one of the things that we have inside the book is called SMARTY goals. So, you know, you have specific, measurable, attainable, timely. And then the thing I always like to add is your big why. Like, why do any of this anyway? Like, what's going to be the thing that's going to keep you motivated or keep you inspired to go after this journey when stuff gets tough? I think for a lot of people, things get tough and they're like, well, I'm done. But like, what's going to keep you around when things get tough? So like, that's another thing that's in the book that we delve deep into. And the last one is like the power of habit. Like, we talk about goals a lot. We talk about like how to get goals. And I think for a lot of people, like, we don't have a problem with making goals and like making flowery, like SMART goals. Like, we can write those out. But I think what we have a problem with is like the next step to get there. And I think for a lot of people, they don't understand this is like habits. Like habits, like doing the thing that's going to get you there every day, that micro step that's going to get you to your goal. So for example, for me, it was like, okay, we're running a marathon, but I'm not going to do it tomorrow, right? It took me 18 months to run a marathon. So like, what was my habits? Like, things that I did within those 18 months to get me there. And I think for a lot of people, we fall into the society of like all or none and not necessarily celebrating like the micro steps that we had to take in order to get there. Like every day we have a choice to go from 0 to 1 and then go from 0 to 1 again and 0 to 1 again. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, I'm just going to stay at 0.
I think that's a great point as well. Like the whole setting new goals or exciting new goals, especially like around New Year, can be kind of like flashy, but then the actual habits of doing things are almost like the more boring side that people don't really think about. So I think like what you were saying there is really important, because the thing that's flashy isn't necessarily the thing that's important. It's the thing right. that you're doing consistently.
Exactly. So like I think about like all the like flashy things that people got. Like, yeah, I wrote a book. But do you know how hard it is to write a book? Do you know how lonely it was to write a book? You know how like isolating it was to like write a book and to like be in your thoughts in the head and like wake up every day and like start it off with a new blank word document and be like, what the fuck am I gonna do? Excuse my language. Like, you're like, what am I going to do? Right. Also with running, like when you're training for a marathon, most marathons I know here in the States happen either in the fall or in the spring, which means you're either running through like the hottest days of the year during the summer or the coldest days during the winter. I don't know about y'all, but here in New York City where I'm at, like last week, it was colder here in New York City than it was in Antarctica. Like, I'll say it again. It was colder here. Last week, it was colder here in New York City than it was in Antarctica. And then be like, oh, I got a race in 3 months. And it's like, were you running? I'm like, hell no, I'm not getting out the bed. I'm staying in. It's like, well, how does that interact with the whole goal in itself? Mm-hmm. And it's typically like the unflashy stuff, the stuff that's not sexy that you have to like master and do in order to be able to revel in the flashiness or like some of the rewards that comes with.
Yeah. I would say that, yeah, maybe establishing those habits and doing those small steps are the kind of the process goals to reach that outcome goal. It's just as important, if not more important, to get that established first if you're going to reach that final endpoint.
Absolutely.
I don't know about you, but one thing that I've always really struggled with, I'm not a runner at all. I'm more into tennis. I like having like a purpose attached to like what I'm doing. I really, really struggle in my own head when I'm running. I get bored. What do you suggest for people like me who do get bored when they run?
People always ask me that, like, what do you do when you get bored? Like, I do a lot of weird things. Like, I make grocery. Like, I'll be on a run and make my grocery list. Like, oh, I'm hungry. Like, what am I going to eat today? Think about what I'm going to order from. One of the things I like to do is get my phone calls out the way. So I call a lot of family members during my run. And it's like, okay. Oh, like I call a friend. It's like, oh, you're running. Huh? Like, yep. Like, I'll talk to you while we run. And it's like more or less like them talking to me. And me just saying like, yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. So find your most talkative friend and call them and let them talk to you while you run.
Okay. Nice.
Other than that, music, of course, audiobooks, podcasts, things of that sort.
Okay. And what advice would you give to our listeners in coping with kind of some of the mental demands that come with running? So maybe not the boredom side of things, but maybe like that like niggling pain in your calf that's just coming through. How do you get past that?
What I tell people, sometimes you don't need to get past that. Like if it's a niggling pain, if it's a pain, like I think one of the things that we have a hard thing realizing is the difference between pain and discomfort. So like pain, you need to stop. Like pain is like, holy crap, like this hurts and I gotta stop. And like, that's okay. Cause you go live to fight another day. You live to go run another day. Like go get that situated. But like discomfort, sometimes like discomfort sucks and it might suck like pain, but guess what? You can still get through it. And I think for a lot of people, we just have to master our mind and get comfortable with the uncomfortable to know that like you are going after a goal that nobody told you you can't do, or nobody's rooting for you, or maybe they are, but guess what? There's going to be some discomfort along that. Like they don't call it training because it's fun. they don't call it practice because it's fun.
I think it was interesting how you used even you said like you have to kind of master the mind, which is kind of what our the sports psychology consultancy, which this podcast is linked to, is called. And we promote like a lot of psychological constructs. We have like the typical, for example, like self-talk. Do you use any of that through your running? Absolutely. Or to motivate other people? Yeah,
I talk to myself all the time. Sometimes when I'm not even running, I'm talking to myself. Yes, self-talk is definitely one of the things that I also do, right? And like while running, it's like, yes, you can do this, you got this, don't quit, like mantras or just talking to myself. Other times it's like just me like just cursing and like being like, this sucks. And like sometimes you just gotta get it out of you, knowing that you ain't gonna quit. Like I do this thing, me and my friends do this thing where it's like, nope, this is tough, I'm quitting, but you're still running. It's like, I'm quitting right now. And it's like, sometimes you have to, like just give validity, like to what your thoughts are going on in your head, but you know, you're not going to quit. But sometimes you can be like, I'm quitting right now, this second. And it's like, nope, I'm still running. It's almost like that trick. I don't know. This is me on a tangent. But it's almost like that trick when somebody who has the hiccups, like one of the tricks to solve that is to tell somebody to hiccup like 3 times in a row right now. And then like you tell them to do that, they typically stop hiccuping because like their brain don't know how to like translate that. And then they stop.
So when you do think like, if you do ever think negatively, do you ever practice, you know, changing your thoughts into more like functional, adaptive, positive perspective?
I think one of the things you have to do that because with the sport of running or just like doing hard things in general, like your mind is going to play tricks on you, like point blank. And whether you are practicing positive self-talk, whether you are trying to be adaptive, like you have to be able to master that battle within your mind in whatever way that you think is possible. And like for me, like I use a couple coping mechanisms, right? Like, yes, talk to myself. Yes. You know, I try to turn a positive to a negative. Yes. Sometimes I'm just going through the suck. Yes, sometimes I just try to dissociate from the pain. And yes, like I just try to bring friends, or like the thing I like to do is try to help somebody else. So it's like I'm going through this sucky incident right now, and there's nothing I can do about it. And there's nothing that I can think of to like help me through. And then during the race, like that's typically when I'm like looking towards somebody else to try to help out, or like have a conversation with somebody else. And knowing that like by talking to them, it's distracted me from the suckiness that I'm going through. And in turn, maybe that they are probably going through the same suckiness, and they are also getting some benefit from it as well.
Where do you think that kind of comes from? Does that your values as a person anyway, to always look for others? Or do you think that like your sporting background, American football, had some kind of influence over, you know, obviously being a team sport, you're there for each other. Does that translate into running?
I think it could be all of those things. I think it could be all of those things that helps me get there. And I think all those things are true. Like I do have an ethos of just helping people, right? And having a sense of community, and knowing that like when you have a community, harder things become easier. Like that's why there's like team sports and so on and so forth, right? Or like group exercise classes, because by doing it, like everything becomes easier. But I also think like, yeah, it could be like that team camaraderie that I've had as well. So I don't necessarily have an answer that pinpointed. So I'll just say yes to all of them.
All of the above. Do you think your approach to criticism changed at all since that first doctor's appointment?
Come again? What was that question?
Do you think your approach to criticism has changed at all since that first doctor's appointment?
That's a good question. Yes and no. Because it's typically not. By playing in sports, like you understand like criticism is a part of the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can either use that criticism for positive or you can use that criticism for negative, right? And you know, growing up, like my one of my favorite players or basketball player was like Michael Jordan. So I remember like looking at his documentary and like him using criticism or like just anything about the opposite player or coach or whatever to like fuel him to like perform better. And like those are things that I like to do as well. I think that can help to an extent, but also knowing that like sometimes you can internalize that criticism, and like that's where like a use for me, like a use of a therapist comes into play. So that way you can help decipher like what's actually real and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also like one of the things that's in my book. Like I created a persona, like a persona to my inner thoughts. His name is Otis, right? And I have a voice for him. He has a whole backstory. So whenever there's like criticism, it's typically in Otis's voice. Or if there's like internal criticism, it's from Otis's voice. So that way I'm able to then like pause and be like, oh, like these things that I'm thinking are not true about me. Or like these feelings that I'm feeling is not true about me. And they are also fleeting. So if I stick at it long enough, those feelings will float on away like a little butterfly in the air.
I do have one final question for you, if you're willing to take it on. I'm just interested, have you spoken to that doctor since the first appointment?
No, I don't go where I'm tolerated. I go where I'm celebrated. Never went back to that doctor never another day in my life, and don't plan on meeting them again. Like I don't go and this is how I see doctors, so apologies to any doctors, but like in here in America I kind of see doctors as like overeducated nail techs, Like, and what I mean by that is, like, as a nail, just like a nail tech or a nail salon, like, they're just about every corner, just like a doctor's office are. And there are good ones and there are bad ones. And I think the thing that we do with nail techs that we don't do with doctors is that if a nail tech gave you bullshit, sorry for my language, but if a nail tech gave you crap, like, you won't go see that nail tech again, and you go tell all your family and friends not to go there. But if a doctor to give you crap, you tell all your family and friends, like, yeah, he a good doctor, you need to go because he a doctor. And it's like, no, screw that. I want somebody to be nice to me. I want somebody to give me good bedside manner. And if you're not going to give that to me, guess what? I ain't got to come back to you. I can go take my money elsewhere. And that's what I did.
Wouldn't it be funny if he's now a part of your run club?
That would be funny. That would be funny.
Who knows?
Who knows? You never know. Anything's possible these days.
Yeah. Okay, so to finish off, we would love to do a quick fire round. So just some quick questions that you just answer, kind of whatever comes to your mind first. So the first question is, right, what is your favorite motivational saying, if you have any?
My favorite motivational saying is no struggle, no progress.
And what is your go-to self-care routine or item?
Baths.
Nice. What would be your last meal if you had to choose something?
Carrot cake.
Ooh, nice. What is your favorite song to listen to when running?
Till I Collapse by Eminem.
That makes sense. One item you couldn't live without.
Ooh. My cell phone.
Good answer.
Got to provide the music, haven't you? Got to be away. Lovely. Thank you very much. That is the end of the quick fire round. Martinez, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today. Is there anything else you would like to say before we wrap things up?
No, thank you much so much for having me. If anybody's interested in looking me up, you can find me at 300 Pounds and Running. On IG, and go check out my new book, Slow AF Run Club, The Ultimate Guide for Anybody Who Wants to Run.
Great. Okay, that is all, listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Do share this with your friends or someone you feel would benefit from it. Most importantly, like, subscribe, and comment down below any questions or guests you would like us to get on in the future.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram or X. Links will be in the description box below. Or you can find us at Mastering My Podcast, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.